Okay. Good morning, and we'll call this meeting of the Board of Trustees to order. And I'd like to ask for approval of the agenda. Is there a motion?
So moved.
A second?
Support.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any abstentions, objections? All right, the agenda is approved. Approval of the minutes. Is there a...
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Support.
Okay, supported. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, the minutes are approved. We'll move on to the President's Report, and it's a pleasure to join you this morning for my first Board of Trustees meeting as your 22nd President here at Michigan State University. And I'm wrapping up week number 6. It has been a whirlwind of activity over those 6 weeks, and it's hard to believe that we're only 2 weeks away from graduation, where we'll celebrate the class of 2024, as I look at a few of those incredible students who will be graduating 2 weeks from today. And I look forward to congratulating those accomplished Spartans at the Breslin Center and wishing them well for the next chapter of their lives. If there's one thing that I've enjoyed during my listening and learning tour over the past 6 weeks, it's been the curiosity of our students. And I talk often about the importance of always remaining curious. And it was a thrill to meet so many of the future Spartans at the Breslin Center last week when we welcomed the class of 2028, or many of whom will be part of that class of 2028, Admitted Student Day at Breslin last Saturday. We had 3,600 prospective students plus family members, and I want to thank our Office of Admissions and our colleges and units for supporting this event. It was a huge success, probably one of the highlights of my first 6 weeks as we gathered over 10,000 people in total at the Breslin Center. And thanks to all those faculty, staff, and current students who stepped up to help orient the prospective students. And it means so much to show them what a friendly and welcoming community we have here at Michigan State University, in addition to the incredible educational programs and student experiences that we offer. I met another wonderful group of students just a few days earlier when we celebrated the induction of our Tower Guard students at the Honor Society at the May's morning sing. It was wonderful. And it was bright and early in the morning over at Beaumont Tower, and we had held the annual pre-dawn ceremony there. These high-achieving student leaders, relatively new to Michigan State University, with their work in our resource center for persons with disabilities, doing things like scribing for exams, creating more accessible textbooks, and tutoring, are just some of the responsibilities that these students take on just in their second year as sophomores here at Michigan State. And so that was a lot of fun. It was great helping to welcome and honor all those, as I said, sleepy-eyed but engaged first-year students that were inducted, and meeting many of their parents who had surprised them by showing up unbeknownst to them at the Beaumont Bell Tower as the sun was rising up to the east. It was just a beautiful morning with a cappella singers, and again, one of the highlights. I've also met a lot of students on my campus-wide listening and learning tour, and have been struck by how many come from out of state or from other countries. And many are part of multi-generational Spartan families, which is a testament, I think, to the love and passion that Spartans have for this university. I'm pleased to know that about two-thirds of our recent graduates stay in Michigan to start their careers, making MSU an important talent pipeline to advance the state's economy, something that I had a chance to speak with Governor Whitmer about just a few weeks ago, and placing emphasis on that we are a university for Michigan and thinking about the future opportunities here in Michigan. So with regards to that listening and learning tour, I've just completed my 20th stop on a 48-stop listening and learning tour. It's been busy. And I'm getting close to halfway through all of the colleges and administrative units. And one that I visited 2 weeks ago was the Broad College of Business, including the Burgess Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. And that same week, sadly, we lost alumnus Bob Burgess, whose generosity supported the Institute's creation in 2005. And I'm glad that I had the opportunity to speak with him by phone on two occasions shortly after my having been appointed president back in December. And Bob Burgess is an incredible Spartan and someone who cares deeply about the success of our students. And so I regret that Bob passed away that same week when I was scheduled to meet him in person over dinner at Cole's house. But I can't think of a grander legacy to leave than the bright and engaged Burgess Institute students like those that I had the opportunity to meet at that celebration of entrepreneurship and innovation just a few days after Bob's passing. One such student, first-year finance major, Alina Morse, founded the nation's fastest-growing zero-sugar candy company, better known as Clean Teeth Candy, when she introduced herself to me. But together with a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to oral health and entrepreneurship education, Alina, I will guarantee you, is going to be an incredible ambassador for our great university. She was incredible and enjoyed. I could have spent the entire evening listening to her talk about the impact that she's having. I did take a few pieces of candy and a lollipop back to my daughter Tessa back at Cole's house, and she gave it a thumbs up. Another student, senior Matt Rogan, helped found a company around a high-tech pepper spray device that, when activated, alerts the user's emergency contacts and 911. And they already have a development and marketing contract with Mace Security Management. And another incredible student, curious student, as I like to say. And so I think that, as you well know, with many faculty here in the room, we really have such passionate and curious students at Michigan State University. And I know that you'll be impressed with today's research presentation, which includes an undergraduate entrepreneurship component to it. And I want to give a shout-out to our two newest Goldwater scholarship winners, selected by the Goldwater Foundation for their STEM activity and potential for significant contributions in their chosen fields. Third-year student Libby Ashby is studying geological sciences and chemistry, and second-year undergraduate Aaron Phillip is studying physics and advanced mathematics. Both are in the College of Natural Science and the Honors College, and they represent Michigan State University's 54th and 55th Goldwater Scholars. So congratulations to Libby and Aaron. I think they deserve a round of applause. And as you noticed, as I described the backgrounds of Libby and Aaron, they're both double majors. And that's another thing I've been so impressed with by talking with our students here, is the many students that either double major or graduate with a major and a minor. And I think that's something that's unique to Michigan State, and something that I think we is so important as we think about the career trajectories of our students and the way in which they will pivot multiple times throughout their careers. And I think to have that the breadth across multiple disciplines, I think, is important. I also want to offer up congratulations to Michigan State University's gymnastics and ice hockey teams on winning both their regular seasons and their Big Ten championships, which I greatly enjoyed witnessing last month at Jenison Fieldhouse and at Munn Ice Arena. And I know that the future is bright for so many of our student-athletes here at Michigan State, but that was a lot of fun. I think that was maybe at the end of week three to celebrate two Big Ten championships within hours of one another. And so congratulations. And I'd be remiss if I just didn't talk about the importance of seeing how innovation is promoted across our colleges, and that takes world-class faculty that place emphasis on this. And it honors how this institution was created to give everyday people, starting with farmers, our first entrepreneurs, if you think about it, the cutting-edge knowledge, allowing them to thrive in a dynamic world. And I think, again, just so impressed with the many brilliant researchers, instructors, faculty, starting on my very first day here, we honored several of those distinguished faculty members at our annual endowed faculty investiture. I appreciated the presence of Trustee Kelly and T-Bay for being there, and alongside many of our senior leaders and faculty who were there to support and to honor these outstanding faculty. I've greatly enjoyed hearing how our faculty members are reaching across disciplines to address some of society's greatest challenges. If we are to continue this strong trajectory of excellence in teaching and research, we have to do everything possible to be able to recruit and retain top talented faculty, and I want you to know that that will be a major priority for me as your president, and I know I speak for members of our leadership team and our provost team and the deans. This is critically important. So. I also admire how so many of our faculty members are supporting students' curiosity and confidence, including through evidence-based restructuring of our STEM courses to make them more experiential and interdisciplinary. And that was something that I learned on two or three of my stops on my listening and learning tour. One of those faculty leaders that I met was the Lapin Phillips Professor of Science Education, Melanie Cooper, who was recently elected to the prestigious National Academy of Education. So congratulations to Dr. Cooper. And on the graduate education side, you probably saw within the last few days, we had some great news. It gives me great pride to congratulate the programs that placed highly in the new U.S. News and World Report graduate program rankings. And just to highlight a few, not only have our College of Education's elementary and secondary education programs topped their national rankings for 30 consecutive years, but the college now has five programs ranked number one, including the curriculum, the program and curriculum and instruction, educational administration, and higher education administration. All nine of the college's programs are ranked in the top 10. So what a remarkable achievement, and I think they deserve a round of applause. And in the Broad College of Business, our supply chain management program, which I've learned so much about, heard so much about, even prior to my arriving here on March 4th. But the supply chain management program continues its number one ranking for the eighth consecutive year. Congratulations to our faculty and staff who are driving excellence in that program as well. So congratulations to those. I mentioned in my community letter about 10 days ago that we also celebrated Graduate and Professional Student Appreciation Week. And I had a chance to drop into one of our gatherings to express my appreciation to our graduate students. Throughout my academic career, which is now 28 years in running, I've been fortunate to have the support of many graduate students. I think while as faculty members we talk about how we support them in their career trajectories, I would say that it's a two-way street. I've been fortunate to secure probably more than $30 million in research grants during my career, and I could never have done that without the support and the partnership of outstanding graduate students. So as I say, there are a few joys that are greater than watching these dedicated scholars grow into tomorrow's leaders, and so I was pleased to be able to go and celebrate alongside them. I want to just also talk a bit about facilities, because resources come in many different shapes and sizes, and there's none, there's no resource that's more important than people. The people are what make this place run, and they are the heart and soul of the university, and their successes, is our collective success as a university. But such excellence demands facilities that are equal to the task of allowing them to rise to their potential. And I've seen many facilities on my tour, and Some of them are incredible and outstanding. They're state-of-the-art buildings. But also there are many that are showing their age and their limitations. And I was, you know, the top talented and dedicated people working in those facilities get the job done despite some of the inadequate facilities. So I just want to again emphasize that we'll continue to work hard to improve facilities. We're going to maintain that upward trajectory as a top global public research university. We need to continue to keep our eyes toward renovation and replacement of many of our facilities, I should say. So stay tuned and more to come. And so it was with great satisfaction that yesterday I joined board members and others for the groundbreaking of our updated state-of-the-art dairy cattle teaching and research center. And that was a wonderful event that brought together members of the community from the legislature and others who helped to make that possible. And today we'll gather again to break ground for crucial upgrades and expansion of our plant science greenhouse. But these facilities, both of these facilities support our research, teaching, and partnerships in the plant and animal sciences, and we're grateful for the financial support of the state of Michigan and many forms of support from stakeholders and donors around the country, I should add. And these much-needed facility enhancements will serve MSU students, scientists, and stakeholders well into the future. Another important facility comes before the board today with a request to proceed with a new joint biomedical research building in Detroit in collaboration with our partners at Henry Ford Health. This is an endeavor that I've been very excited about since the day I started exploring this opportunity to become your new president. And so this new building will add capacity and synergy to our joint research into cancer, neuroscience, immunology, and infectious diseases. Together with a focus on health inequities and disparities and social determinants of health. So this is an incredibly exciting project which will lay a physical foundation for one of the nation's designated cancer institutes or cancer centers by the National Cancer Institute. And this is an important designation because it essentially says that that we are a center of excellence in cancer. And as I look over at at Norm Beauchamp, who's been at the front of this endeavor. So thank you, Norm, for your hard work on this. And this is going to help deliver cutting-edge cancer treatments across the state of Michigan. Let me briefly return to the topic of Michigan State's welcoming, supportive, and inclusive campus, which is so important to the success of any university community, and certainly that's the case here. And I want to first highlight the release of our annual Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion report. Our DEI work is a recurring topic of discussion in my listening tours. It's one of the questions that I asked the deans and senior leaders to provide for me in a briefing, is that what are we doing in this space to make sure that we have an inclusive and welcoming community for all of our students, and where are we falling short, and what can we do to help make sure that we are continuing to improve. And I think we're seeing improvement across our colleges in areas that, including faculty recruitment and staff recruitment. The new report tracks our progress for inclusive excellence. And as our Chief Diversity Officer, Vice President Javar Bennett, wrote in his announcement, some 110 action items are being implemented or are in progress. And so I look forward to learning more about the specifics of those action items over the next few months. You can access the report and view the university's DEI scorecard on the Office for Institutional Diversity and Inclusion's website. And thanks to all, starting with the IDI team, who are moving us forward in this important area. While we are making improvements, we still have much more to do in this space. And I know there are empathetic and emphatic and emotional conversations taking place on our campus and in our community. So we'll continue to work together to get better in this space. And just know that our community's experiences, thoughts, and concerns will help inform my leadership on this topic, and so your voices are important. And I'm committed to fostering a safe and inclusive community in which we demonstrate compassion, empathy, and understanding for one another. Second, I want to remind people, you know, on this topic that we observe National Sexual Assault Awareness Month and MSU's It's On Us Week, as we call it. We continue to build a culture of awareness and safety around preventing relationship violence and sexual misconduct. We are celebrating the fifth anniversary of our prevention, outreach, and education department and 15 years of focused prevention work at MSU. And I'm looking forward to touring the Center for Survivors later this month as part of my listening and learning tour. And I'm pleased to report that the documents pertaining to the Nassar case have now been fully transferred to the Michigan Attorney General's office, and per the board's earlier decision to release those privileged documents. Finally, and I'm just about done, in the spirit of welcoming and supportive campus, in the spirit of a welcoming and supportive campus, this week I had the opportunity to help welcome Irvin Magic Johnson back for a Lansing Regional Chamber Economic Club program focused on the Lansing Promise. If you don't know much about this program, you ought to check it out. It was an incredible day to have Magic back on campus. This scholarship program has assisted 2,000 Lansing K-12 students to attend post-secondary opportunities, including at Michigan State University. Here we had four of the five students that were featured 2 days ago were MSU students, a few that are about to graduate, and I applaud Magic's commitment to community engagement, giving back to his hometown, and helping students achieve their path to success. He clearly cares about this community and his alma mater, and I enjoyed hearing him reflect fondly on his time at MSU, learning how transformational it was for him and for his career. So together with people like Bob Burgess, who I spoke about, and Magic Johnson, I've been able to meet a number of alums and donors, and I've been told that it totals now more than 260 contacts that I've had with alums and donors, and 10 different advancement events so far in only 6 weeks, and there are many more to come, and I'm looking forward to meeting many more Spartans in the weeks and months ahead. And so with that, I want to just again thank all of you for your support. So many in this room have made my first 6 weeks enjoyable, and my wife Amy and I have just felt so welcome. So thank you, and we will move on with the agenda. So with that, I'll turn to Board Secretary Fletcher for public participation on items germane to the agenda.
There are no such items this morning, President Kuskowitz.
Okay, thank you. Then I will call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, for the gift, grant, and contract report.
Good morning. Chairperson Kelly, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is January 6, 2024 through March 15, 2024. The total value for this period is $108,356,501.
Wonderful. Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report?
So moved.
A second?
Or a second.
Okay. All those support?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. The gift, grant, and contract report is approved. I'll now turn to Doug Gage again. You got the mic again, Doug, for our research presentation.
This is an exciting time of year as we end the semester. And we celebrate the success of our students typically in this April meeting. And so today we are going to highlight the achievements of two students. We have one student, but I think there's an opportunity here to really highlight just some excellence of our two graduating students, one graduate and one an undergraduate. I'm going to be uncharacteristically brief in my introduction of them, in part because I want to let them have plenty of time to tell their own story and for you to ask questions. I also don't want to have my own career compared to theirs when I was an undergraduate and graduate student. So first up is fifth-year student, a Ph.D. candidate in Rufus Isaacs' lab. She's earning a dual degree in the Department of Entomology and the Department of Ecology, Evolution, and Behavior. The second is Tanushree Thapar. She's a senior honors neuroscience student, minoring in entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial studies, and she's also already started her own business, and she'll tell you about that. These are two very impressive students whose stories are going to fill you with Spartan pride as they share their journey at MSU. So please first welcome Jenna Lockwell. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for your time and for the opportunity. I am extremely honored and humbled to be here today to discuss some of my research on how extreme heat affects bees and blueberries. Before I get into the research, I want to spend just a little bit of time introducing myself. So I've lived in Michigan my whole life and have always dreamed of becoming an MSU Spartan. As a kid, I was always outside and loved every critter I came across, and it took me a long time to realize I could actually make a career playing outside, essentially, or learning about our natural world and protecting it for years to come. So I started as an undergraduate student here in 2015 and got a job as a student researcher in the entomology department. And I hadn't really considered working with insects before as my career, but very quickly fell in love with the work when I realized there were so many unknowns and things to uncover. So it really brought back all of those childhood curiosities. And I specifically really wanted to study bees and pollination systems because I began to understand how important these interactions are for the functioning of our planet and all of its inhabitants. I know how important bees are, and if I protect those bees and I protect those plants, I can also protect other things I love, whether it be animals, my community, or my family. So with that, I want to get into some of the motivation behind my research today. So looking at this graph here, we're looking at the historical records of temperature extremes in the United States from 1910 till now. And where you're seeing those red bars is indicating times where temperatures are much hotter than normal. And the taller those bars are, the more abnormal those extreme heat events are. So it's clear that extreme heat events are becoming much more intense, particularly in the last decade or so. But so too are the frequency and duration of these extreme heat events. And this isn't just happening across the U.S., it's even happening in our own backyard. So in 2018, Michigan blueberry growing regions experienced temperatures over 92 degrees Fahrenheit for several hours during its bloom period. This was the hottest year on record in the past 92 years, even hotter than temperatures recorded during the Dust Bowl. In that same year, blueberry growers reported 30 to 50% yield declines. This was millions of dollars lost for the industry, and it inhibited fresh local produce to Michigan consumers. However, no one really understood why this happened, why this yield loss occurred. So to understand this a little bit more, I want to break down the blueberry pollination process. So essentially, pollination is the process of moving pollen from one flower to another, and one of the best animals to help mediate this process are bees. There are over 20,000 different species of bees in the world, and most of them have formed very tight relationships with flowering plants. This is because bees get most of their food from flowers, and many flowers need help being fertilized. So what these bees do is they collect pollen, and they deposit these pollen grains onto the stigma of a flower, which is one of the female floral organs. And if that pollen is viable, it will germinate and grow those pollen tubes up the style of the flower in order to reach the ovary. If it reaches the ovary and fertilizes that flower, it will produce a berry. And the better pollinated these flowers are, the bigger, sweeter, and more nutritious these berries are. So this process of animal-mediated pollination is a huge deal. In fact, about 75% of our world's crops requires animals, primarily bees, to aid in this pollination process in order to produce the food that we rely on. But in recent years, there have been shocking native bee population declines with worrying consequences for both agricultural production and the resilience of natural ecosystems. So how could extreme heat disrupt this pollination process? So what we did in our research, our first step was looking at how blueberry pollen responds to extreme heat. As I mentioned in that last slide, pollen needs to germinate and grow pollen tubes in order to reach the ovary to fertilize it to produce fruit. So in this graph here, what we're looking at is that pollen tubes, and we're seeing they get shorter as temperatures increase. This is potentially shedding light on some of these yield losses we saw in 2018, where maybe fertilization was limited in these flowers and could have led to fewer, smaller berries. But this is only a piece of this pollination puzzle. So how could this also be affecting bees? Well, we know that plants are producing pollen for their own reproduction, and these pollen grains contain nutrients like proteins, lipids, amino acids, and carbohydrates in order to fuel these reproductive processes, like pollen germination and pollen tube growth. At the same time, bees are also visiting flowers to consume this pollen to fulfill their own nutritional needs, as well as those of their offspring. Because like humans, bees need a healthy, balanced diet of proteins, lipids, etc. to develop and survive. So what we've hypothesized in our research is essentially that when these blueberry pollen grains are exposed to extreme heat, they may be lacking in some of these nutrients. If that's the case, then there could be repercussions not only on plant reproduction, but also their pollinators in terms of their development and survival. So what we did in our research to understand this a bit more is we took flowering host plants, including blueberries, and we grew them in the MSU greenhouses until about early bloom. And then we exposed them to either normal or extreme heat temperatures. We then brought those plants into field cages at the MSU entomology farm and released mason bees in these field cages. So mason bees are a bit different than honeybees, which is maybe a species you all are more familiar with. These are native solitary bee species, and the populations have been reported to be in decline around 60 to 90% in recent years. So what we did is we allowed these bees to fly on these flowers, collect pollen, and, yeah, I spent a lot of time on that graphic. We allowed them to collect pollen from these flowers, and we recorded things about their behavior and egg laying. And once they had laid those eggs in the field, we would go in to collect them at night, bring them back to the lab to allow those eggs to hatch, consume that pollen that those female bees collected and provided to those eggs, and then we measured their development and survival throughout their adulthood. And our findings from this research were extremely stark and clear. What we found was that heat stress host plants indirectly has negative repercussions for these bee pollinators at multiple different life stages as well, as eggs, larvae, and as adults. Specifically, what we found is that these female mason bees who we provided heat stress host plants produced about 70% fewer eggs. And of those eggs that consumed that heat stress pollen, 60% of them died before ever reaching adulthood. The few bees that did survive into adulthood took about 3 days longer to emerge and died 3 days sooner, which is actually a substantial amount of time considering the fact that these bees only live for about 20 to 30 days in the season and could potentially miss the bloom time for many important crops, including blueberry, cherry, apple, etc. So this novel research done here at MSU provides a few important conclusions. First, we now know that extreme heat has negative repercussions on blueberry pollen viability, which again could be potentially affecting the yield loss we saw in 2018. Second, we also now know that exposure to extreme heat, even for just 4 hours, is enough to affect native bee development and survival. And together, these findings suggest cascading interactive negative effects of extreme heat on wild bee populations, the pollination services they provide, and the crop yields. So this research could not have been done without the expertise, support, and guidance of so many Spartans, including those at our MSU facilities and our MSU collaborators across many different disciplines. I also want to thank my advisor, Dr. Rufus Isaacs, who's also here today, and my entire lab group for all of their support and guidance. And I also want to specifically highlight the undergraduate students that helped make this research possible. They collected data, took care of plants and insects, and were central to the success of my research, but really any research group. And with that, for the time I have left today, I want to highlight the Entomology Research and Outreach Fellowship. So this is a program I helped co-create along with other graduate students in 2020, where we provide students research experience, particularly those that have come from historically excluded groups or have limited access to opportunities. We provide these students a livable wage, one-on-one mentorship, health insurance, and hands-on experience doing research here at MSU. So far, we have supported 12 students, and we just hired 3 more students this year, which is great. But this is a grassroots program. It's run entirely on donations and grants. And so if you're interested in learning more about the program, we listed our website on this slide here, and then we also provide a QR code in case you're interested in donating to the program. And with that, again, I want to thank you all so much for the opportunity and for your time. And for any time I've left, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Question. And I can go first if there's not a question. But I'm curious, I love the work that you're conducting there. Any estimates on the financial potential financial impact of this research, either here locally in Michigan or across the country? Have you had a chance to look at that?
Yeah, so in that year of 2018, I believe with the yield reductions we saw, it was around $3 million that was lost in terms of that production. And every year since then, 2022 was also a massive loss that year, again, following another extreme heat wave that happened in May. So it's definitely something that is having economic impact and reducing that local produce to our Michigan communities.
And I also have to ask, I've learned this, I'm getting better at this.
Yeah.
Where are the best blueberry farms?
So if you look this way, Michigan blueberry countries, so we use the lake effect. Blueberries need cooling in order to develop properly, and so we grow them along the coast of Lake Michigan so they have this snow cover to help protect them, because these are plants that need cold temperatures, which is why part of the reason when we're seeing these extreme heat events in the spring that are very abnormal, we're seeing these negative consequences.
Yeah. I just wanted to tell you this is a very fascinating presentation.
Thank you
for your research. Thank you for starting this fellowship to help others that come behind you to continue to do this great work. I have a severe bee allergy, but today I am thankful for the bees because I love blueberries. Exactly. So I just, you know, when we think of nature, we don't necessarily always appreciate how the climate affects bees. I'm worried about the polar bears, and I should be worried about the bees in our state. So I appreciate the knowledge that you're giving us and the work that you're doing, and hopefully we're going to eradicate these problems so we can continue to eat these wonderful West Michigan blueberries for many years to come.
So thank you so much. Yep. I appreciate that.
Other questions?
Thank you all again.
I would now like to bring up our undergraduate student, Tanushree Thapar.
Good morning, everyone. I'm deeply honored to stand here today before you to share my journey of Michigan State University to entrepreneurship. It's truly a privilege to be able to express my gratitude for the supportive environment that the esteemed Board of Trustees and President Guskovitz have fostered that encourages students like me to dream and to be able to pursue those dreams. I also want to thank my mother, my father in heaven, and my brother for supporting me through everything. MSU is a community of over 50,000 students, including more than 9,000 international students from over 140 countries. And 4 years ago, in the heart of the COVID-19 pandemic, I was one of those international students. Packed my bags, left my loved ones, and moved thousands of miles away to embark on a journey to MSU to discover myself. And I chose to become a part of this esteemed institution because it celebrates diversity. My journey began with a unique set of challenges. The first semester was conducted online, introducing me to a different style of education, especially as an international student. Subsequently, in my second semester, I moved to Acres Residential Hall, where I started my first job ever as a student server with Michigan State Culinary Services. During that summer, I took on the role of a new student orientation leader to help incoming students transition to MSU. I actually ran into a student yesterday who remembered me from 3 years ago. He shared how I helped him through a tough time as an NSO leader. Knowing that I made such a lasting impact on someone truly touched me. But isn't that what we do here at Spartan Nation, help one another. My entrepreneurial journey began in my sophomore year, where my passion for sustainability led me to the MSU Surplus Store and Recycling Center, home to one of the country's largest recycling facilities. There, as a technical assistant processing e-waste, I discovered that recyclable materials with a market value of over $435 million are annually sent to landfills from Michigan households. I learned about the vast potential of recyclables and the challenges hindering effective recycling. Inspired to make a difference, I pitched Greenly, an app designed to educate people on proper recycling practices during a two-day venture competition hosted by the Burgess Institute of Entrepreneurship and Innovation. During that subsequent summer, I had the privilege of interning at A.T. Still University in Missouri, the birthplace of osteopathic medicine. I worked at the Ostrowski Lab, where my research was based on cardiorespiratory dysfunctions of Alzheimer's disease. It was an experience very essential in my journey to make a difference in the world. In my junior year, I started my internship at the Burgess Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation as a Shaberg Entrepreneurship Scholars intern. It was a landmark year for both MSU and I because we launched the Shaberg Scholars Program. In this role, I helped age 25 scholars and gave guidance to them to perfect their business models as student entrepreneurs. Little did I know, my diverse Spartan experiences were shaping me to find and create myself, bringing me closer to my calling. That summer, I interned at the MSU Research Foundation with their Conquer Accelerator program. I was paired up with a student startup named Stunio, led by a founder and CEO, Adam Green, and MSU alumnus from the MSU Law School. It was so inspiring to see the day in the life of an entrepreneur. I contributed to Stunio's rebranding efforts and gained insights into the importance of marketing and its crucial impact on business success. Coming from a neuroscience background where understanding human behavior and decision-making is key, I relished the opportunity to apply this knowledge in a new context. It was thrilling to see things from a very different perspective. Later that summer, I found my baby. I found it here, inspired by my own challenges in finding jewelry that matched perfectly with my skin tone. This led me to recognize a broader issue of lack of diversity and inclusion within the jewelry industry. I studied color theory and aimed to introduce DEIB, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging in the jewelry space, helping individuals of all skin tones feel confident in the jewelry that they wear. In addition to diversity and inclusion efforts, my commitment to sustainability shapes the foundation of HEAR. I have chosen to work exclusively with recycled medical-grade titanium for my jewelry. Moreover, I'm a firm believer in the power of connecting the world through business and trade, especially in its potential to aid developing countries. With this in mind, I'm focusing on sourcing recycled medical-grade titanium shipped from India. This approach not only supports sustainability, but also contributes to fostering trade relationships that can benefit countries like India, aligning with my vision of creating a business that makes a positive impact globally. I want to express my deepest gratitude to Bob Burgess for the enduring legacy he has left behind. His contributions have profoundly impacted many, including myself. The Burgess Institute support has been invaluable as I'm developing HEAR, providing me resources that range from graphic designers to legal interns. Their partnership with the MSU Law Clinic, known for its entrepreneurship expertise, proved to be exceptionally beneficial. As an international student trying to run a business in a foreign country, I hit a major roadblock with visa restrictions. That said, I couldn't sell anything unless I gave up more than half of my company to an American citizen. But the Burgess Institute is actively helping me navigate through this, finding solutions and standing by me in every step of the way. All this while, I was a resident assistant in four different neighborhoods on campus. This role allowed me to support students, connect them with the resources that they need, and help them navigate their MSU journeys effectively. I also was elected as the president for the Michigan State Neuroscience Club. I helped fundraise for the American Association of Alzheimer's Disease and the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention under my presidency. I also founded the first neuroscience quiz bowl hosted by the Michigan State Neuroscience Club called Synapse. Last semester, I authored a paper on neuroscience of human decision-making, and currently I'm working as the research assistant in the Social and Media Neuroscience Lab here at MSU. Looking ahead, I have been accepted into country's top master's program in marketing research and data analytics here at Michigan State within the Broad College of Business. I have also accepted my graduate assistantship as an assistant community director, continuing to support and make a difference for students. Through all these experiences and my work with HEAR, my ultimate goal remains unchanged. I want to make a difference in the world. Thank you.
Do you sleep ever?
Questions?
I'm just in awe.
We're amazed.
Yeah. I'm sure your family is extremely proud of you.
I hope that too. Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Good work.
I'm curious about your first startup, if you will, Greenly. What, is it the sustainability of that and that initial?
We need
it here. Are you going to make sure it's sustained?
We basically, the team that I worked with, they've all graduated, and we never actually continued with it, but we did. Ended up winning of the two-day venture event, and we built an app within 36 hours, which was basically educating people on how to recycle, connecting them with the resources nearby their houses so that it's convenient for them to recycle, because a lot of people don't recycle because it's not convenient for them. They don't go out of the way and they're like, I'll just throw it in the trash. But if there's an app, letting people know that, you can actually recycle this here or even at your house by doing this, so people will actually do it. So we built that up in 36 hours for that.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah. We just drafted an acceptance to both of our medical schools for you, so you'll have to choose.
That's great. That's cool.
Thank you.
Congratulations. You're going to, I know, be a great ambassador for Michigan State University, and I know that Bob Burgess would be so proud. And so thank you.
I hope that too. I can't wait to start Masters in fall again. So love being a Spartan.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, I will turn to Interim Provost Yanksko for personnel actions and information reports.
President Kuskowitz. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the April 2024 list of personnel actions. I present for approval. But I would like to, you want me to skip them? I'd like to go through them. Good. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments. Jesus J. Lara, Ph.D., 1855 Professor, School of Planning, Design, and Construction, with tenure, effective August 18, 2024. Carrie Sant, Ph.D., Associate Professor, Department of Pharmacology and Toxicology, with tenure, effective August 16, 2024. Libby Weber, Ph.D., Associate Professor, Department of Management, with tenure, effective July 1, 2024. And I'm pleased to recommend Heidi Hennig-Kaminsky, Ph.D., Dean, College of Communications, Arts and Sciences, and Professor, Department of Advertising and Public Relations, with tenure, effective June 10, 2024. I present for approval the following personnel actions. Douglas A. Gage, Ph.D., Vice President for Research and Innovation, Office of Research and Innovation, for reappointment as Vice President for Research and Innovation, effective June 18, 2024. Douglas A. Monette, for an additional title of Interim Vice President and Chief Safety Officer, Department of Police and Public Safety, effective March 4, 2024. Adam Nightingale, Head Coach, Men's Hockey, Intercollegiate Athletics, subject to contract, effective February 12, 2024 to June 30th, 2029. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Is there a motion for Trustee Byram? Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Personnel actions are approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further informational?
Nothing from me. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to committee reports, and we'll start with Trustee Pierce. We'll now present the Committee on Budget and Finance. Trustee Pierce.
Thank you, President. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled LGBTQIA and Community Student Scholarship in Human Medicine.
Is there a motion to approve?
Move.
Second?
Support.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions?
I should say that Norm Beauchamp is available if any discussion is needed.
Okay. So okay. The motion's approved.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby adopts the basic residence hall double housing and dining rate of $12,564 for first-year residents who select the Silver Unlimited Meal Plan for the 2024-2025 academic year, and adopts the basic residence hall double housing and dining rate of $11,754 for second-year residents who select the Silver Unlimited Meal Plan for the 2024-2025 academic year. Be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby adopts a 5% rate increase for 1855 Place and University Village Apartments, and hereby adopts no rate increase for Spartan Village Apartments for the 2024-2025 academic year. And Benny Gore is here and available for discussion.
I'll support it.
Support it. Is there a second?
No.
Discussion.
So good morning, everyone. Thank you for engaging in this process. We are asking for a 6.89% rate increase. 5.89 represents our inflationary cost, which is we approved last year a salary raise for all of our team members who work really hard every day, and as President Gutzowitz says, the heart and soul of the institution. And also with our food costs has gone up. 1% is for Campbell Hall, which is at the historic entrance of campus. It will be renovated over the next year. It will also be the home of the Honors College. And we do have some donor support for that in the center building for the Honors College programming. And our youngest residence hall is was built in 1967, and we do have maintenance that we need to continue to do every year to maintain it for our Spartans who come here. And as our student researcher said, well, I don't know when she sleeps, but that is an example of our great team members and staff members.
Thank you. All in favor, right?
Yep. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions?
Thank you. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled Wilson Hall, Renovations for Technology Engineering. And again, Janet Berlin Fornari, I hope I'm saying that right, I'm sorry if I'm not, is available for discussion. How do you say your last name?
Berlin Fornari.
Fornari. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So the new Bachelor of Science in Technology Engineering program is set to launch this fall. It's an innovative program. We're bringing together technology as in curricula and computer science, along with that of engineering in disciplines of mechanical, electrical, and industrial engineering. This is cutting edge. We're bringing into the classroom project-based experiential learning, so lots of labs, lots of space for the students to learn. We expect a demand for this as students realize there is another option to the traditional engineering programs that we've had here on campus. These students also, it's another option for them to retain our students that have come here to the College of Engineering. But additionally, this supports the state of Michigan and the workforce development that we need in technology, engineering, and manufacturing with this program. Now, this program is innovative also from the sense of that it is flexible. We have two concentrations in the program to start with, one in mechatronics, which is electrical and mechanical coming together, as you would have in electric vehicles and autonomous vehicles, automation in manufacturing. But also our second concentration is in embedded cybersecurity. So it's the cybersecurity when you bring together software and hardware, needing both that technology and engineering experience. With that, we can add or change our concentrations in the program as needed. So with that, we are looking at the authorization to plan to build out in the South neighborhood, which where engineering already has a presence in a living learning community called CORE in that area. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support. Yeah, is there a second? Support?
Yes, we have
okay.
A second.
Good second. Any further discussion?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
Okay. As chair of the trustee committee on budget and finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan the project entitled FRIB, chip testing facility. If you'll call for support, then I will ask for Alexandra Gay to give.
Okay. Is there support? A second?
Second.
Alexandra Gay.
Thank you very much. My name is Alexandra, and I'm the FRIB Scientific Director. I wanted to thank you for your support in planning this advanced chip testing capability. All integrated circuits that are part of a spacecraft or autonomous vehicles or anything that flies have to be tested against the damage from cosmic rays. And FRIB houses one of only three facilities in the nation that can perform these tests. And so with the added building extension, we would increase the capacity, which would position us as a national leader in this important capability. So what the outcome would be is an MSU-owned chip testing facility, instruments and equipment funded by the federal government, and operations and the building funded for by user fees. So, and this is on top of a very nice educational program that we are having with the College of Engineering, where we would actually use these facilities to educate grad students with these high technology skills. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Thank you.
As chair of the trustee committee on budget and finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan the project entitled Intercollegiate Athletics, Outdoor Tennis Courts, and Support Building.
Support.
Okay, Alan Heller is available for discussion. Alan, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Joan Secchia and the Secchia family have been longtime supporters of MSU Athletics and Michigan State University. Joan just recently donated $10 million to MSU Athletics to enhance the men's and women's tennis programs. Why this is important, our tennis teams currently do not have dedicated locker room space. They share locker room space with the public. We don't have dedicated team space. And also our outdoor courts are deteriorating to a point where they need replacement. In spite of that, our teams are playing well, and our men's tennis team currently is first place in the Big Ten. So this gift will greatly enhance the experience of our student-athletes and ability for our men's and women's team to compete in the Big Ten and nationally.
I just want to
to say, Alan, I appreciate your continued commitment to our students, our student athletes, to make sure they have facilities that are worthy of how amazing they are. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Trustee. Right.
Well, and I would echo the attention to the Olympic sports. And you see what that attention has resulted in, because we're excelling in many of the Olympic sports. And last year at the board retreat in June, we were in Grand Rapids, and we had the opportunity to interact with Joan Sakia. She attended many of our events, and she is just an absolute gem and a wonderful Spartan. And please convey
She's
that
awesome.
The entire board
from all
appreciates
of us,
Joan.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great work, Alan.
Thank you. Hello, was that the trustee Bassett?
I wanted to commend you on your commitment to equity. You have consistently been a pioneer for women in sports, as well as the Olympic sports as well, and I just appreciate your attention to that. It's important for MSU.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Trustee Bassett. Any other comments, discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank President Guskowitz and Chairperson Kelly, can I have 30 seconds? I really would like to take this opportunity to thank our student body. Our student sections have been sold out all year. We won 3 Big Ten titles here on campus in front of our home crowd. I travel quite a bit with our teams. Other schools don't have it the way we do. Our students have been incredible in supporting our student athletes, and so I would like to publicly take this opportunity to thank our student body. And then, I swear this is it. Lastly, Vice Chair T-Bay and Trustee Byram invited Justina Gaynor to the meeting today. Justina is a women's soccer player. She's a 2-time Big Ten champion. She is the current player of the year, midfield player of the year in the Big Ten, and she's also a 4.0 kinesiology major that will graduate this spring, and she's coming back for one more year next year. Justina. Thank you.
Congratulations. Yes. That's great, Justina.
Yes.
I can also attest that I couldn't find a seat in the Jonathan Fieldhouse for the gymnastics Big Ten. So I stood the whole time.
So great.
Congratulations, Justina. Okay. And I want to echo what Ellen Haller said. I think, I don't know what day it was, it might have been day 4, I was in the I-zone making my rounds, and it's incredible. Then with the Munsters at the hockey game a few days later, our students here support our student athletes in amazing ways, as do our faculty and staff, so it's a great environment. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, as chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorize the administration to proceed with the project entitled Research Building in Detroit, and be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby authorize the administration to negotiate and execute a ground lease with Henry Ford Health for a term that may exceed 10 years, and upon such other terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or the president's designees, and be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby authorize the administration to negotiate and execute a lease with a medical research organization for use of one floor in the new research building for a term that may exceed 10 years, and upon such other terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or the president's designees. Be it finally resolved that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby authorize the administration to negotiate and execute any documents related to the project's inclusion in a transformational brownfield plan and compliance with the City of Detroit's Community Benefits Ordinance. Okay, and then Norm Hubbard is available for discussion. Where's Norm Hubbard? Norm.
Thank you. Good morning. It's my privilege to share the work that we've done
on the building to this point, and I just want to cover this briefly for you. This project is doesn't stand alone. It's part of a combined effort called the Future of Health Detroit with Henry Ford and the Pistons. You get a sense of that from the list here. Our piece at the bottom, this is an 80 PI building. Roughly 40 of the initial occupants in the building will be currently Henry Ford PIs. They are all MSU faculty at this point. They're Henry Ford employed MSU faculty. All their grants are now on the MSU base and help grow our base of NIH and overall research. As Trustee Pierce mentioned, we're also going to be joined in the building by the Nick Gilbert Neurofibromatosis Research Institute. The Dan and Jennifer Gilbert are trustees and sponsors and supporters of both Henry Ford and Michigan State. And although they tragically lost their son last year, they're going to house this institute inside this building, and it will be synergistic with much of the research that will happen going forward. Quick overview of how this is. This will be an MSU-owned and operated building, but it's done closely in conjunction with Henry Ford from a funding and operational perspective. This gives you a sense of the timing. We were here about 14 months ago for your approval to do the planning. An amazing amount of work has gone on. I'll cover that in a second. Since then, and we're ready to break ground with your support in May and hopefully open this building in 2027 and have it begin to have impact in the state. It's important to understand the process we went through. The building is not just standalone. We went through, in addition to the planning for the building, which was complex, it's a big high-tech research building. This is a $1,000 square foot building, which is a new and the top in my career, partly a testimony to inflation, but partly a testimony to the intensity of the research that will happen inside this building. And so not just the planning process of Henry Ford and NGNRI and Michigan State learning to work together in a short time frame. We also had a trip through the approval process for the City of Detroit, the Community Benefit Agreement. Although it was arduous, it ultimately allowed us to demonstrate and document our Henry Ford and the Pistons' commitment to that community, and many folks were involved in that process, which wasn't the building itself. It was critical to be able to move it forward and required to get the $40 million of TVP funding, which helps make the building possible. Give you some sense of the location. If you're familiar with Detroit, the Fisher Building, which we own part of, is to the north across Grand. The building is sort of on the southeast part of the campus, on the lodge. I don't have a laser pointer here. I do have a video, which I'll show you in a second. Will you do a better job than I will of this is a true partnership with my boss. So the building on the site, it's a big building to give you some sense of the scale of the building. If you're familiar with this campus, ISTB and the IQ building combined are about the same size as this building to give it a more human scale. If you took the building and dropped it into Spartan Stadium, it would cover the floor from end to end, probably overlapping on either end. So it's a huge, huge building and will be impactful. At the end of the day, this building is not, it's a tool. So it's only as good as has been said as the people and faculty and staff who work inside it. It's also critical that this be done with the community and not in the community. So a lot of work has been done to have this arrive in the New Center neighborhood in Detroit as a resource for the community. And we'll be doing impact that isn't just what's in the building, but we do around the building with the community. So I think that's something we'll all be proud of going forward. I have a little video here, which I think will give you a better sense of the location and look of the building. There's music here, but so you see the Grand and the site there, the building's in the lower right. This is an old parking lot outline of the building. Residential's across the street that's being developed with the Pistons, so we have a live, work, play community. This gives you a sense of the building from the lodge.
We are going to have Michigan State on that building.
Yes, ma'am. There is a Spartan helmet there.
Yeah. A helmet, yeah.
We're going to put it across the whole west-facing thing, but it's a little bit more. For First floor will have assembly space and educational space. It's a secure building. It's a research institute, but we want to be able to serve as a venue for donors and educational activities with the community as well. So we think it will really be an enhancement to that neighborhood.
Time. This is good. Detroit.
Good for the blueberries. Just to give you a sense of that. There's your helmet. Very good. So, but before I take questions, I just want to call out hundreds of people, thousands of hours with work to get to the approval of the plan. I'm going to, with your indulgence, read off a few names. From Henry Ford, Margaret LaPointe, their VP of Research, who was with us from the very beginning, retired and continued on in planning despite personal and family health issues. Her replacements with two people, Dr. David Lanfear and Dr. Michael Bai, also continue to put many, many hours in place. Jerry Darby and the facilities team at Henry Ford, with a special call out to Pam Hazel, who organized and had follow-up for hundreds and hundreds of meetings. Mark Corvo, Denise Brooks-Williams, and Barry Blackwell, leadership from Henry Ford, who were critical helping us navigate our process with the city of Detroit. Terry Grebe, the chief administrative officer, and Cheryl Verbruggen, the CFO of the Health Science Center itself, sort of sitting in the middle, helping us navigate and bring the organizations together. The NGNRI, Laura Graneman, and Ivan Baines, who's the scientist they hired to help lead this, have been great partners in doing this work and really are part of the family at this point. The Pistons, Rich Haddad and his team, also critical to navigate that work with the city and collaborate. We're going to share a garage. We're going to share that campus. So they're really great partners to work with. And inside MSU, this is a long list, and I'll go short, but Dan Bowman and his team, special call out to Dick Temple, who just did a heroic job organizing and not just adding thought value, but organizational value to how we were able to proceed. Dr. Gage, a special call out, his entire team. This building has complications and compliance and all the things which make it safe and effective for doing very, very high-tech research around creating mini organs, organoids, which are sort of one of the really hottest things in medical research at the moment. Jeff McKeegan from Mid Office was also and will be going forward a key player in how we organize that. Lisa Frace and special call to Dave Maddox. This is a $335 million building. That's a lot of money. And all the pieces to put that together. And I think it sets a standard for how we go at building, because we're not just thinking through how we fund the building, but how we fund the faculty and staff who live in the building. So often institutions like this have a build it and they will come. This is a build it and we know how we're going to bring the people to help populate the building. So I think that's distinctive and helpful. From the provost office, Dr. John Ambrose, that CBA required that we demonstrate how we're going to be present in that community and to help education. There are two underperforming high schools in that neighborhood and we're going to show up. Dean Jackson from College of Education is a Detroiter himself and will be down there helping us with that also. From OGC, Lynn Kreiser and Larry Gremmel have been heroic all the way through this. I don't know how many versions of the CBA Lisa had to sign, but it was always with a short fuse, even over weekends sometimes. So that was pretty amazing. And from Health Sciences, Laura Kacheta, Norm's chief of staff, Karen Crosby, our CFO, Rebecca Shade, my assistant, who set up more impossible, got to get this done next week meetings than anybody should have to. And Robert Bardot and Arlen Daly, who is our community outreach person in Detroit. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for all
the work. I just want to say that I couldn't be more excited about this. If we think about the way we are connecting biomedical research and clinical care across the state of Michigan now, from Detroit to East Lansing, to Grand Rapids and beyond. This is incredible. And short, real quick story, but the day before Amy and I left to come to East Lansing in early March, we had our neighbors over for dinner, and he is a cancer researcher at UNC Chapel Hill. And Dan said, "We're going to still be working together." And I told Norm this. And I said, "Okay, great, tell me more." He said, the MSU Henry Ford Health Partnership was awarded one of the NCI, National Cancer Institute's, moonshot grants. Only seven given out. Chapel Hill got one, and we got one here. And I said, this is going to be really cool. So congratulations on all of this. And that's just one of many, I think, great things to come. And so we'll be by your side as we build this out.
I really am excited about this. This is going to transform healthcare in the city of Detroit, in the state of Michigan, and across this country. And for those under-resourced communities in Detroit, they're actually excited about this as well. And so it's going to make a big difference. It is going to change people's lives. So thank you.
And I would only say, too, that Norm, thanks for highlighting all of those that contributed and worked so hard on this. I want to give an extra shout out to the Detroit City Council, because without that community benefits agreement signed and the tax incentives that were involved, this project would not have been able to move forward. It was kind of the last step. It was not an easy step, but I do appreciate the support from the City Council. I want to make sure that they're recognized even one more time. But this is exciting. It's a game changer for this university, and it speaks well for the next 30 years that our partnership is at least 8 out of contract. So great.
Thank you. And I'll just make a comment as well. I have the honor of representing the board on the steering committee, and it is a very expensive but very exciting project. So I fully support it. And there's so many aspects to this, whether it's the community impact, the live, work, and play concept, and then, of course, the building itself. It's very exciting, and all of the work that's going to be done in the building. So a shout-out to you and Norm Beauchamp, because it's an amazing project. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to thank both the Norms as well. They, being one on the steering committee, as the whole conceptualization of our partnership began, has been so exciting. It was inspirational. But to see this in fruition from the time that you thought of it, Dr. Norms, to now, is amazing. And as a Detroiter, I'm super excited about this partnership. Super excited about all of the resources and all of the presence that MSU will have in Detroit. I appreciate all the hard work. I know so many folks on the board lobbied the city council as well as me, and getting this over the finish line was one of the greatest achievements that I'm really proud of. So thank you so much, Dr. Norm, for your hard work. I'm excited about this.
Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say the one person Norm Hubbard didn't recognize was Norm Hubbard. And you see his emotion. I'll have the same. He was tireless.
Yep.
Thank you, Norm.
So.
You
both were.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
So I think there was a second.
Yeah. Is there hey, Norm, we got Kleenex back here.
Right. So we had a second, so... we'll call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorize the issuance and delivery of general revenue bonds and adopt the resolution attached thereto.
Is there support?
Support.
Support. Okay.
Lisa Fraze is available for discussion if anybody has any questions or if you want to say anything.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. This bond issuance will allow us to provide the permanent financing for projects that have already been approved, including the one that was just approved, and some of which are currently in planning but will come forward before the bonds are issued. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
The committee also received a fiscal year 25 budget outlook update from Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer Lisa Fraze. Do you want to say anything about that in terms of the process?
Typically the budget will come to the board in June, and we are continuing to work on development of what the revenue outlook looks like.
Thank you. At the February Board of Trustees meeting, I stated that the Committee on Budget and Finance would undertake a review of Michigan State's investment portfolio as well as its investment policy. The review is underway, so I wanted to give you that update. And now that President Guskowitz has joined, the committee is looking to him for his engagement and his insights. The review will be completed by the end of May. and if changes are recommended, the proposed policy revisions will come to a future Board of Trustees meeting for approval. MSU has established a policy that provides a framework for active professional investment management. Investment decisions are based on acceptable risk and return and aligned with supporting the institution's financial health and advancement of our mission, that is education, research, and advancing outreach, engagement, and economic development activities. MSU is committed to safeguarding the university's investment portfolio and investment decisions to ensure that resources continue to be available to support our students and our faculty now and in the future. Therefore, any changes will reflect the contemporary investment vehicles that are available and appropriate for institutional investing, but will not include divestment of any kind. Divestment would conflict with stewarding the institution's financial health, would increase investment risk and limit returns, and jeopardize the assurance that resources will continue to be available now and for future generations. That concludes my report, President.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. I'll now turn to Trustee Renee Mackey Jefferson for the Committee on Academic Affairs.
Thank you so much, President. I'm pleased to say that my first act as the Chair of Academic Affairs is to bring forward this motion, a resolution on emeritus designations, and I'm going to read the resolution out loud. Whereas Dr. Teresa K. Woodruff and Dr. Satish Udpa each served Michigan State University with highly meritorious and exemplary service during their respective tenures as interim president. Whereas the Board of Trustees finds their service to be of such a standard as to be worthy of bestowing the Emeritus designation upon them to recognize such service and commitment to the university. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees grants the title of President Emerita to Dr. Woodruff and President Emeritus to Dr. Udpa for their service to the university and reaffirms its appreciation to both individuals for their efforts.
Support.
I would like to note that Secretary Fletcher is available if there's any discussion or questions.
I think the resolution speaks for itself.
Okay. I think we could all echo at the table, though, that we all appreciate and thank them for their service. And this is highly fitting to recognize them in this way.
I confirm.
Yes. I just wanted to thank them. Maybe you're watching. Spartan Nation is very appreciative. They both came into their positions at very tumultuous times during my term here as a trustee, and we could not have survived without them and the leadership that they provided. So I think this is a great way to honor them and everything that they gave to the university. So thank you.
And I would just thank the Faculty Senate for their resolution supporting these titles. So thank you.
Thank you.
Call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
I want to, Trustee Vassa, what was your vote? Sorry, you were on mute.
Okay, sorry. Okay, so, Secretary Fletcher, you have what you need?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay, so the motion passes. Congratulations.
And then I'll just conclude by saying that the committee heard updates on accreditation, on FAFSA, unionization, and the Henry Ford Health Partnership, and this concludes my report.
Thank you. We'll turn to Trustee Brianna Scott for the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. I can get used to saying that, I admit. As the chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approves the following: an exclusive license agreement with Am High Tech LLC, a lease amendment with Jolt Energy Storage Technologies LLC, and a sponsored research agreement with IASO Therapeutics, Inc.
Is there support?
Support.
Support. I think Doug Gage is available if there's any discussion. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. Okay.
The committee received updates on the external auditor's report and on the scope of the annual audit plan and a single audit, WKAR and NCAA agreed upon procedures. I will now defer to our chairperson, Dan Kelly, who will now make a statement on behalf of the board.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. On behalf of the board, I've been requested to make a statement. The university's Office of Audit Risk and Compliance provided the board its initial update regarding reports of an explicit hand gesture made by Trustee Vassar towards Trustee Byram and Trustee Scott at the special board meeting on March 3, 2024. OARC's review is still ongoing. If true, the board condemns those actions. The board is supportive of OARC completing its review and any recommendations or potential corrective actions it deems to be in alignment with its findings. That concludes my statement.
Thank you. And this concludes my report.
Thank you. All right. We'll turn to Trustee Kelly Tebe, Vice Chair Tebe, for her committee report on student life and culture.
Thank you. The Student Life and Culture Committee discussed student-athlete support. The committee heard from three students, Nalani Iosa with women's volleyball, Noah Matheny with baseball, and our own Justina Gaynor with women's soccer that Alan so eloquently introduced already. And Justina Gaynor is here today to share her experience as a student-athlete.
Good morning. Thank you all for having me here. My name is Justina Gaynor. I am a senior on the women's soccer team. Like Ellen said, I'm studying kinesiology with a minor in health promotion, and I'm graduating in a couple weeks. I'll be back in the fall taking my COVID fifth year, and I'll be starting a master's in sports leadership administration. I started my college career at Butler University down in Indiana, and after my first year, I decided to enter the transfer portal, and luckily enough, I was given the opportunity to come here and play for Michigan State University and be a Spartan. I grew up in Michigan. I'm from Shelby Township, so it's awesome to be here, and I love it here. And I just wanted to speak on some of the resources that we are provided as student-athletes in terms of academic support. We have the wonderful Clarabelle Smith Center, and basically everything that we do academic-wise kind of operates out of the Smith Center. Every team has a student academic advisor that we go to. When I first got here, some of my credits from Butler unfortunately did not transfer. I lost almost a full semester of credits. So I worked closely with Danny Sager over in the Smith Center to figure that all out, get me back on track, and kind of lay out my plan for my 4 years here. And I also wanted to highlight some of the career services that we have that show that they care about us as more than just athletes. We have Angela Monti that kind of helps us with all of that stuff. And, it's a great resource for us, and we're very thankful for the commitment to it and caring about us as more than athletes and what we do in the future past our playing days here.
I also want to add that we also had some of the staff from the Clarabelle Center on the committee call, and it was very clear their commitment to our students. They truly love our student athletes and are committed to them every day, and it was really incredible to see the relationship between the students and the staff just on the call. So, and I also want to thank Steve Smith for his continued support for the students and their success. So thank you. The Board of Trustees scholarship awards are granted at each commencement to graduating seniors with the highest cumulative grade point averages at the close of the semester prior to graduation. We are pleased to recognize on the screens, wait for it, 271 students who are graduating this spring with the highest scholastic average of their class. We look forward to further honoring these students at a special recognition event on Thursday, April 25th. And they are all on the screen here. It's going to take a while. So can we give them a round of a hand?
Okay.
Yes.
This concludes my report. When they're done listing all of our students. Thank you.
Go green.
Yeah, yes. Go white.
Go white.
I will just say, as the names are scrolling through, that the recognition reception that's going to be over at the hockey arena really is a nice tribute to the students. They bring their families and several of their academic advisors or people that made a difference in their career here at Michigan State, and it's really a wonderful celebration of their time here. So I'm looking forward to that here in a couple weeks.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Another round of applause. Okay, thank you, Trustee Teabay. So we'll now turn to liaison reports, and I will turn to Chair Dan Kelly.
Thank you. We will now hear from the student liaisons. Do you want to start, Taylor?
Sure. I bet you will put the microphone up. All right. Hello, everybody. I hope you all missed me when I wasn't here at our last meeting, but it's good to be back. I really wanted to take the time today to highlight some of the milestones that were accomplished by RHA this academic year, and kind of share this with you as my last meeting here as a liaison. So specifically for those of you who don't know how RHA funding works, we collect a $25 tax from all of our on-campus students. That's decided through a referendum that also just passed this year, meaning that we are allowed to continue collecting our tax. And that goes into our various events and programming that I'm going to highlight for you today. They also go directly into a lot of the services we offer, such as the free streaming service that students are allowed to use on campus called RHA On Demand, as well as a number of technology rental services that we have steadily increased over this past year. However, one of the most visible ways that we see this tax utilized is through events. This includes events that just we had with RHA put on, such as Taylor Swift listening parties, movie events, even cultural events like our Lunar New Year celebration, and a number of stress relief events as well that we specifically try to target near midterms and finals. It also includes some conferences. I've mentioned this in the past, but we recently hosted the Great Lakes Affiliate of College and University Residence Halls, or GLACUR. It's a mouthful, I know. Spring Leadership Conference at the Kellogg Center several weeks ago, which went really, really well, able to show off our school and our RHA to many, many other RHAs and similar organizations from all across the Great Lakes region. Lastly, it also includes a number of collaborative events that we help put on as well, including our spring concert, which just concluded fairly recently, that we put on in collaboration with ASMSU, the University Activities Board, and Impact Radio. A large portion of this funding also goes directly into other groups on campus as well. This includes our CORS and COPS groups, their affiliates, other RSOs, and even a handful of university departments. This year, we directly funded over 62 different organizations of these, helping facilitate especially events, but also services and initiatives that these groups have been working on. And for those of you who know what our logo looks like, I'm sure it's no surprise given the number of flyers and posters and t-shirts that logo has been appearing on this year. In addition to this, all of our hall governments and caucuses receive a budget directly from us that they are able to use for their own events, granting them autonomy to put on their own events and programming within the halls and the neighborhoods. This allows students to attend things happening either in their same neighborhood or in many cases within their own hall, increasing a lot of engagement in those spaces. We've also been working on a number of social issues this year as well, including passing bills and working on initiatives related to bus and transportation issues, contraceptive access, sexual health, mental health concerns, accessibility, and increasing student voices and how we hear them on this campus. This is only a small sample of many issues that we talked, but I just wanted to highlight those. In addition to that, we've been investing into future years as well. We are concluding planning for renovations of our RHA office within Holden Hall. We're retrofitting the space a little bit to be more in line with how we currently operate and better support our various hall governments and caucuses specifically. Overall, I don't have time to share all the wonderful things we've been able to get up to this year. Otherwise, I'd keep you all here for several hours, and I do not want to do that to anyone. But I really, really wanted to take the time to affirm how proud I am, not only of my RHA employees, but also the number of constituents and others that we have worked with this year who have put in countless hours of time and effort to make everything we do possible. And while I won't be with RHA for much longer, as I'm graduating, to clarify, I would like to congratulate Erin Caldwell, the 55th session RHA president, and the rest of her team who will be coming in and taking charge here this summer and continuing this tradition of excellence that we have set forward to continue improving the on-campus living experience. Thank you, everyone, and go green.
Next, we'll hear from Hannah Jeffrey from COG.
Hello, all. So I'm a big fat liar because I said last time that would be my last meeting. But as it turns out, this is my last one. So hope you are too disappointed. Thank you. I just wanted to quickly thank you all for the amazing experience that being the COGS student liaison has been. And I'm looking forward to seeing all future graduate and professional students being welcomed, honored, and hopefully supported throughout their time here at Michigan State University, as I have seen them being supported, honored, welcomed throughout my 6 years here as a PhD candidate. Well, PhD student before that, it's complicated. The PhD, as a PhD candidate about to graduate in the summer, I really hope for the best for my incoming president, Miles Roberts, he, him pronouns, and I would also like to just encourage all of us to stay up to date with everything that is going on in the lives of graduate students. We have a very diverse community consisting not only of domestic students, but many international students as well who face some unique socioeconomic challenges. And I would especially like to encourage thoughts go out to those experiencing more stress as a result of inflation. I hope that we will be able to support them financially now and in the future. So thank you very much, and go green.
I'm short, so I'm going to have to move this. But hi, everyone. For those of you I've not met, I'm Emily Hoyampa. I'm the ASMSU and MSU undergraduate team vice president, also outgoing, so super excited for that. Today's my last report and probably and hopefully my last time in this space, so let's get the show on the road. Before I recap the year ASMSU has had, I wanted to officially introduce all of you to the president-elect, Connor Lay. Connor, if you could please stand very quickly. And now, okay. Connor has been involved in ASMSU for the past 3 years, most recently as the Vice President for Internal Administration. The organization is in good hands with his leadership, and I'm excited to see everything he's going to do. If you get a chance to meet with Connor today, please wish him so much luck. And for now, please give him another round of applause. As stated in my State of the Student Body address on April 3rd, last General Assembly year, the 60th session, we passed 88 pieces of legislation. This General Assembly took an interest in many different avenues for advocacy, both on and off campus, from advocacy relating to improving the health and well-being of Spartans by addressing mental health and food insecurity, to reforming parking, to changing the elections of the ASMSU president, to implementing more campus safety measures, to protecting the rights of our student activists, and to call for the university to divest from weapons manufacturers and companies that invest in genocide. There's been a ton of work done. However, there's still so much work left to be done, and students hope to be a part of this conversation in order for progress to continue on this campus. The Student Allocations Board, also part of ASMSU, has also had a busy and productive year funding RSOs and cores and COPS groups. This year, ASMSU was able to fund over 75 RSOs, totaling over $230,000. This enabled our entire Spartan community to thrive and come together to do the things that we love. We also allocated over $300,000 to the Council of Racial and Ethnic Students and the Council of Progressive Students this year. This allowed us to sponsor some amazing events, like the North American Indigenous Student Organization's annual Powwow of Love, the Asian Pacific American Student Organization's annual Cultural Vogue, and so many others. On top of this, the General Assembly also allocated over $25,000 in funding to our campus partners who help students across campus. Some of these partners include the Gender and Sexuality Campus Center, Women's Student Services, and so many more. Now, back to some agenda items I wanted to highlight, some of which will be brought up later in public comment. For one, ASMSU passed Bill 6065 to advocate for the Board of Trustees to divest from weapons manufacturers alongside other companies complicit in genocide. ASMSU is planning on bringing up this advocacy every 2 years, if not passed, and all students are asking for simply to have a seat at the table while the university is deciding its investments, to meet with the trustees and relevant stakeholders regarding what our investments should be, and to not invest in companies or organizations that are funding violence. That shouldn't be that hard, right? Well, the lack of engagement from relevant parties would prove otherwise, and I strongly urge you, the Board of Trustees, to listen and take meetings with the parties advocating for divestment and then actually put in the work to divest. Next, ASMSU also stands in support of UTSF. I genuinely believe that our faculty are unlike any other, and their union should be recognized by this university. Our faculty are the reason Spartans find their passions through their education, at least for me. I would not have made it through the challenges of this year that this year has posed without the faculty here. So I feel like the least we can do is support the UTSF, right? And last but not least, ASMSU is grateful for the support and collaboration with March for Our Lives, Students Made Action, and Sit Down Michigan State in the week of advocacy and programming put on during the week of February 13th. We're also thankful for those who came to those events throughout the week. In that same tone, the last bill of the 60th session was Bill 1695 to advocate to permanently cancel all academic activities on campus each year on the 13th of February in remembrance of the lives lost during the tragedy that struck our community on February 13th, 2023. To all members of Michigan State and the Spartan community, I urge you not to rush anyone as they grieve. Please listen to Spartans as they say they're in different parts of their healing journey, and something that you could do that would allow for all Spartans to come together is to cancel class next February 13th and on. Students should not be forced to go to class on such a difficult day such as this, and I hope to see an announcement about this making this change soon. On a personal note, this year has been really hard. I thought the hardest part of my term would be taking meetings on a six-hour time difference last summer, when in actuality, that was the easiest. Whether it be the honorary minor in PR I feel like I've gotten or balancing how to do as much as my body will physically allow me to do, I've taken away a lot of lessons. Looking back, at the end of the day, I was a student first, but no matter what I did or what I said, it was never, ever enough, and I feel as if I never got to be the student part of the student body president role. But the biggest lesson I've taken away about MSU is that this university is not healed. Well, from what you may ask, MSU is not healed from Nassar and Tucker, as there is still so much work that needs to be done for Title IX, RVSM, reporting, and believing survivors. ASMSU has started and been in numerous conversations with members of the university about this, but there's a long way to go before anyone will be satisfied. Next, this campus has also not healed since February 13th, as there is still so much work that needs to be done to make campus safer in the process of violence that should have never happened in the first place. There's no need to rush someone's healing journey because it does not mirror your own, and I hope a diverse range of voices can be brought to the table to discuss what safety means for everyone and not just the loudest voice in the room. Even further, this university has not made any substantial progress on supporting its students of color. I hate to break it to you, but you can't celebrate having a student and woman of color as student body president and others of color in higher leadership positions without actually doing the work needed to support them in their pursuits. Hate speech is... Hate speech has also been rampant on this campus, and I truly hope that there is some work done to not only hear the harm students who feel unheard, but that there is actual accountability for those impacted. And finally, you may all be wondering, what is the last thing this university needs to heal from? Well, trustees, this university needs to heal from you, and your constant need to make everything about you and not the people you serve. Your drama should not be continuing through the news, and it is completely unacceptable to continue acting the way you all have carried yourselves both in and outside of these settings. And all in all, your behavior this past year has been quite embarrassing. I'm not even sure if governance training can fix the board at this point. Regardless, you all need to do better for all of the Spartans you serve, not just the ones you think will benefit you. Not only do you need to do better for all Spartans, but I truly hope and expect that you treat my successor better than you treated me. And also, please listen to members of public commenting today and validate why they're bringing these concerns to the meeting, since many of these concerns you have had hand in creating. However, I'm not going to end on that note. There are students, faculty, staff, administration, and many community members that give me hope for a better future for all Spartans. I just hope this can be translated into meaningful, tangible change. Thank you.
Before we move on to the faculty liaison, as everybody should recognize, this is the last meeting of all of the student liaisons. I know me personally, I want to thank you. I think the board understands, maybe a lot in this room, how much work and effort you put into those jobs, and so I appreciate it. We'll move on to the faculty liaisons.
Good morning, everyone. So this is my last board meeting of the academic year as Faculty Senate Chair. It's exciting. It has been an honor to serve the faculty in this position, although I never thought it would be as challenging and traumatic as it has been this year. I would not have been able to make it through the year if it were not for my at-large member colleagues. First, to those rotating off, Rebecca Mallowan, our intrepid vice chair, who was an excellent advisor in FOIL, which I need all the time. Deanne DeSimone, who always is willing to examine an issue from all angles and ensure we thought about all stakeholders, especially faculty in the arts and humanities and students. To those continuing, I look forward to working with Justin St. Charles, whose care for students and advocacy for academic specialists always inform his positions, and Angela Wilson, who has always been ready to courageously speak truth to power. Also, congratulations or condolences, as Angela will be serving as the next Faculty Senate Chair beginning in August. Best of luck to her in the next academic year. I will be there to help in the transition as her vice chair. Thank you to Jamie Allen for her steadfast work leading the University Committee on Faculty Affairs in advocating for the faculty and always being willing to be both reasonable as a leader and courageous in putting forward uncomfortable facts when meeting with the board. And thanks to Emily Hoyompa, outgoing ASMSU president, and Hannah Jeffrey, outgoing COGS president, for their advice and their advocacy for students and their fidelity to the welfare of the university. Welcome to the newly elected at-large members, Guo Chan and John Ernie Flessner, who have already proven their dedication to faculty and the university through their activism as faculty senators. And thank you to the numerous faculty members and administrators who sent private notes, thanking me for representing the interests of the faculty and protecting the legacy of MSU as an institution. I am certain there are countless others that I failed to mention. Thank you to all. And per your actions today and our discussions yesterday, I thank you on behalf of the University Council for declaring Interim President Woodruff as President Emerita. The faculty liaisons of the board yesterday discussed how we could partner with you on coordinated efforts among faculty, students, and administration, staff, and alums to engage with legislators and the public to increase the awareness and the funding of state appropriations for the university over the next several years. Know that we can help you with that. The faculty wants to partner with the administration and the board. We have made great progress in having a respectful, mutually beneficial relationship with the administration over the past few years. We implore that the board play catch-up and understand that we are not your adversaries. Let us help. Yesterday, we discussed the need for real, and I mean real, mandatory onboarding and regular recertification of trustees in their governance training. The faculty liaisons shared that they wish for MSU to become a national leader for university governing boards. If you are expected to oversee us all, approve our promotions, our budgets, the changes to bylaws, ordinances on campus, then we expect you to meet the highest ethical standards. I assume all of you now know that as public officers, knowingly abusing your authority or power, or behaving recklessly or indifferently to any limits of that power is wrong, correct? You also likely know that actions or a lack of action intended to harm an individual or group, or even the knowledge that the individual or group would probably be harmed by that action or inaction with indifference to their well-being is wrong, correct? This is known as misfeasance. I am certain that a year ago, some of you understood the consequences of misfeasance in the conduct of your duties. Would that you all had mandatory training to ensure that you all understood this. Many of the crises that transpired over the past year might have been averted. The faculty offer their expertise and their time to help craft training certifications associated with faculty relations, faculty governance, and fiduciary responsibilities. Certifications that are at least as stringent as the ones that the Spartan community takes for its trainings, whether it be for financial conflicts of interests, human subjects protections, relationship violence and sexual misconduct, bloodborne pathogens, chemical spills, or radiation handling, we are grateful to have been trained by experts and for the safety that this training provides for ourselves and for the university community. Let us help you with that. Think back to the issues that we brought to the board in September of 2023, the beginning of this academic year. They reverberated in a letter composed by Trustee Scott in October, enumerating violations of board policy and the board's code of ethics by the board chair. The Senate called for the resignation of the board chair in October. In acting as advocates for the faculty, we tried to hold trustees accountable for their actions and objected in real time to the chaotic management of that fateful October board meeting. The university's third-party investigation by Miller and Chevalier indeed found material violations and was very generous in labeling other violations as missteps by two trustees and found that students were manipulated to carry out an agenda of personal attacks. Louis Brandeis in 1913 stated in one of my personal favorite quotes that sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants, and it is still true 111 years later. When personal and baseless attacks using identity politics are the tools trustees must use, it must be because some sunlight has shone upon things we were not meant to see, and we are not sorry for that. As a board, where have you all been making progress on reform? Changes to rotating board chair, changes to the threshold for adding items to the board agenda. These small items have made the Board of Trustees more functional and less political. Two of the trustees you censured were stripped of their non-essential duties and referred to the governor under MCL 168293. The Academic Congress and the University Council endorsed these board actions. This is a huge step. I can't recall the last time the University Council or the Academic Congress voted to agree with the board. The faculty, the students, and the administration agreed with the majority of the board on an issue. We need more of this, and I hope that trend continues. What have we yet to see? We have yet to see a socially responsible financial strategy that includes divestment from those that profit from war. We have seen consequences of this industry manifested in the atrocities in Israel, Gaza, and around the world. It's wrong that we should not support it. I expect this to continue to be addressed by the Faculty Senate in the fall. We have yet to see meaningful changes in the financial conflict of interest policies or ethics practices for current and emeritum trustees. We have yet to see the mandatory onboarding and renewal training for all trustees. We might have some availability on the summer, so call us. We have yet to see whether the governor will remove two among you under MCL 168293. Whether the governor, 97% of the faculty as a whole and 97% of faculty, students, and administration representatives on the University Council agree. While the academic year is ending, our work is not done. Alas, for some, I will be here next year. I plan to continue advocacy as a representative of the faculty to make this a better place to educate generations of Michiganders. The faculty hope to continue the advancement of our scholarship and show that Michigan State is a destination for the best and brightest faculty and staff. And as former President Woodruff urged of all of us, we must look forward and reach high and advance together. Let's try. Thank you.
Thank you. That completes the liaison reports.